unless you live in the house with that person and go to the bathroom with them and sleep with them, you will never be comparing apples to apples.
Yeah.
So you can't say, well, this person trains at my gym and I saw their program and they're doing this, so why can't I do it? What are they doing when they get home? What's their work schedule? What's their stress like? What's their supplement schedule? Like, you don't
Yeah.
know any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I always say, like, don't worry about having to be strong enough to start somewhere because there's no such thing.
Yep.
And just don't compare.
Welcome to the future is female powerlifting. A show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60 kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in. Aloha, my beautiful friends, and welcome back. We are on episode 90, and today I have a very special guest, one of my favorite lifters to watch, and now I feel like I've seen her a bunch of times lifting, and I feel so special. Miss Barbara Lee came and talked it up. It was so fantastic, and I think when I was talking to Barbara at the end, I told her the one thing that feels very much like an overarching theme to your training is really a growth mindset. And I think you're going to be totally inspired by hearing how Barbara's first meet went compared to what she's at now. And she's been, you know, training for over a decade. Barbara has some wicked numbers. And if you were at the American Pro or saw the American Pro live stream, you would see her bench squat 529, bench 281, and pull 562. She went 9 for 9 that day. That's a 1372 total in the 165 class. And me and Barbara, we 40. I'm 41. I'm a little older than her, but she's not a spring chicken. So let me tell you that you would never know. You look at her and you're like, oh my gosh, she looks like she's like 25. But today's podcast was wonderful. And I love that she talked about many parts in her life where, you know, she had to adjust to injury, to training, to moving. And I think that really inspires me, and I hope it inspires you to know that you can keep training through things and life will happen, but how are you able to keep it going if you really love doing it? And of course, this podcast is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance, where we live through strength. And if you are looking for somebody to help you with your training, if you're at home at your own personal gym, or you don't really have any powerlifters around you, I think that having online training is a great way for you to kind of get an introduction. You know what I mean? Like, instead of just doing everything on your own, we do a lot of video feedback with our clients, and we really help them develop themselves to step on the platform. So if you're interested in that, visit core256.com. Also, I do a weekly newsletter, and this is something that I'm going to be way more diligent about. So if you want to hear a little bit more about like our tips and tricks that are just going to be exclusively for our newsletter, you can visit core256.com/newsletter and just sign up. And I'll have that in my bio in Instagram and Facebook too. And if this is your first time listening, please go give us a review if you really like this episode. In Apple, give us a 5-star review. If you can write a little something, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I'd like to talk about it on the podcast, on the episode when you do leave a review. If you're on Spotify, you can leave us a 5-star review there. It just always helps to grow the show. Now let's get it started with Barbara. Listen, you've been in the game a while, so you're an OG, even though you don't look it. You look as young as you probably were the day you walked into the gym. But tell me a little bit about like how you got into powerlifting in the first place.
Well, I started off, it wasn't even like, it was kind of by accident, because I was probably about 5 or 6 pounds less than where I am now, but I had no muscle. I played volleyball recreationally, but I was really competitive at it. So I traveled to do that. And we were going to Florida for a weekend tournament, and all my friends were talking about bathing suits. And I was like, I'm not going to be in a beach. Not me. So I bought a bathing suit and then had the trip, got back that weekend, looked at all the pictures, and I hated every single one of them. So I went to an Anytime Fitness and I was like, I need to lose 20 pounds. And they were like, okay. And the trainer was like, you're going to not drink for a month. You're going to count your calories. You're going to do that. And I was like, whoa, I didn't sign up for this. That's not happening. So dug into some deeper issues I realized I had, but I started off just wanting to get toned.
Yeah.
And I met my weight loss goal and I was like, all right, I'm good. I'm out. Nice meeting you. And then within like 3-4 weeks, I had gained 10 pounds of the 20 back.
Oh my gosh.
Just not working out, drinking, eating everything. So I went back and I was like, so we got to figure out a way for me to do this, stay in it and have something that keeps me working towards a goal, because if not, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So got the weight back off. And then he was like, what about powerlifting? And I was like, what is that? And he was like, it's just do what I tell you and you'll be fine. He had no idea what he was doing at all. Like, he literally, I found out after the fact, was programming me using Westside Barbell Book of Methods.
Yeah.
And so he was training a brand new female as a geared lifter. So it was always heavy, heavy overload and then lots of like bodybuilding accessories. And I trained 5 or 6 days a week.
Oh my gosh.
I was hurting all the time, all the time. And the worst was my hip flexors and my lower back. And so I went to a meet and these ladies were like, have you ever thought about using Olympic lifting shoes? They have a heel and it might help your hip flexors. And so I told him that and he was like, we don't use that. We use Chuck.
Isn't that funny? It's such a, like, it's still the case. I talk to people who are conjugate. I mean, you know, Wes or Think, you know what I mean? They really align with that. And they're like, we don't wear lifters. We don't this and we don't that. I'm like, that is just the silliest thing ever.
Yeah. So I stayed with him for about a year. I did 5 meets my first year. I bombed at my first one. Oh yeah. Any meet I could find, I was jumping in, because my first one I bombed. I was so nervous and I opened every lift with my gym max. And when I tell you, he didn't know what he was doing. For instance, like, we would train my squats and he would always have his hands holding my belt, like on me the whole time. And so when I asked him about it, I was like, are you helping me? I feel like you're helping me. And he's like, no, I'm just squeezing your belt to create pressure. Well, sweetheart, I'm supposed to learn how to do that myself.
Yes.
So I get to the meet and I open with my gym max and they say squat and it's deer in headlights. Like, I'm like, all these people are looking at me. Yeah. I don't know what the hell's going on. I hit the bottom and I stay there. And I also didn't know that you were only supposed to put in your attempts after. Like, first attempt, you put in your second. So they let me put in all three of my attempts at weigh-ins.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
Yeah. So I put in 225 was my opening squat, 250 and 275 at 132.
But 225 was your max at the time. for those of you who are listening, and when we talk about what you're probably able to do, it ain't going to be 50 pounds more. And if your max was 225.
Like, just right now talking about it, I'm like, that's common sense.
Yeah.
At the time, he was just like, oh no, adrenaline at the meet, you're going to be fine. So missed 225. And then they were like, well, you already put in your second, so you can't go back down.
Oh my goodness.
And just now they let me put it in yesterday and they were like, we're sorry. So he was like, it was just nerves on that first one. You'll be fine on the 250. Yeah, no, missed that. Then I had to go 275. At this point, I'm like, why am I even trying?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
But I was like, I got to go out there. I can't quit. All my friends were there. My son was there. Like, I was just like, I'm going to be so embarrassed if I don't get this one. Take the 275. Of course, I miss it horribly.
Does it like bury you?
Yeah. But the bad thing is they misloaded me. So then they were like, sorry, we misloaded you. We can go again and we'll put the 275. I was like, for what? So like, I was pissed. But I was like, you know what? Don't quit. You got to do it. Just try. So then I take the fourth one and I miss that one too. And I'm just like, I don't want to do this anymore, but don't quit. Go to bench. Bomb out all my benches.
Oh my gosh. So you like fully bomb out. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I sat and cried.
Oh my gosh.
Because I was so embarrassed. And he was like, you still have to deadlift. We are not quitting. I don't care about those other numbers. We got to get your deadlift. That's your favorite thing. It's been my favorite thing since day one. So I go, same thing happened with my deadlifts. I put in all my numbers, But they were like, we'll let you change them. Like, at this point, my numbers don't matter. So I guess it started to be nice. So I ended up PRing my deadlift.
Oh, that's good. Do you remember what I ended up
290.
290.
And so I was just, and I was a sumo puller, dimensional, with knee wraps on.
You had wraps on? They let you have wraps?
Yeah. I have a picture. I'll send it to you. Yes. It was horrible, but I PR'd.
Please send it to me because I would love to post that.
Yeah, it was bad. But I was like, you know what? That made my day. And I was like, I want to do another meet. I'm going to fix the other stuff. But because I did well on my deadlifts, I want to do another meet. So 2 months later, I did another one. Then like 2 months later, I did another one. And yeah, so that was how I got into it. And then after that, I stopped working with him and did like online programming for a long time. And it was just, that was hard for me because I didn't like people watching me. I would go to the gym by myself. And the minute I started struggling, I'd pack my stuff and leave because I'm like, I don't want people looking at me. I don't want to draw attention to myself. And also, like, I don't feel comfortable straining that hard. I don't, like, I got to make a face and grunt and all this stuff, like, completely opposite of what I am now.
Yeah, that's so funny. So how do you think you overcame that?
One of my old coaches, who shall not be named, was actually pretty decent at coaching the mental aspect more than the physical part.
Okay.
Like, it was more just constantly hammering in my head, like, if you want to do this sport, people are going to watch you. You have to get over it.
Yeah.
And when my numbers started getting a little better, like, I remember at one point I was close to breaking a Louisiana state record with the USAPL. And my coach was like, do you think the person that holds that record right now was worried about who was looking at her? Are you going to let her keep that record because you're in your head about looking at that stuff? Are you going to go in the gym and handle business so you can do what you need to do on the platform? So I was just like, okay, I'm going to remember that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try. Yeah. But I went like complete opposite of, okay, I have to be quiet to literally people hearing me in a closed room and people outside being like, don't worry about that noise. That's just Barbara back there training. It was so obnoxious. Like, I listened to it now and I'm just like, my God.
Right. You probably had to go, right? You know, the pendulum swings. And then now you're sort of like in this middle where you're comfortable probably at whatever happens and not having to force, right, anything in particular. It's funny because I'm reading a book right now called Mindset by Carol Dweck. And we're on the sports mindset portion. And that's exactly it. And she talks about like a fixed mindset and growth mindset. You know, fixed mindset says like, you know, I can't do it. I'm not talented enough. Or if you're talented and you don't get it right away, then you're like, I don't want to try. You know, that kind of like, I think I've seen a lot of that where people are talented right away and don't have a growth mindset. They're not willing to kind of like work through shit, right? But I can't, I mean, your first meet is like the definition of a growth mindset. Because not only did you bomb out your squats, you bombed out your bench. I don't know if I would have had the gusto to kind of keep going to deadlifts, you know, and maybe it was naivety, you know, like you didn't know, like what you don't know, like I'll just keep going kind of thing. But I mean, that's what you need. Had you not stuck with it, who knows if you would have continued on, right? Because it might have been a really embarrassing feeling for you. But that's crazy.
After I did that, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to do another meet. And if I can't do this one, if I have the same results, then I'm not going to powerlift. This just isn't my sport. If I can't get over being in front of people and all that stuff, then I'll just go back to volleyball. I was happy there and I'll be good. But that meet, I think I went, did I go 9 for 9? I might have sandbagged a little bit, but I went 9 for 9.
Rightfully so.
And I met other women and I was like, okay, this isn't bad. But even training, there were no women my age in my area at all doing it. So I had to train with college kids. Mm. And it was funny because when I worked out with them, they all just kind of treated me like I was part of the group. And then I don't remember what we were talking about one day, but I said something about how old I was. And they were like, oh, damn, you're old. Like, we didn't realize you were that old. And I was like, thanks. Yeah, y'all are all basically like damn near my kids.
Yeah.
But thank you. So it was nice once I started doing more meets. The very last meet I did at 132, my first year, I was the only woman in the whole meet. And wow. I drove to Alabama to do it, barely made weight that night. I went 1 for 3.
Oh my God.
Because the weight cut sucked. But it was just like they would load my weight and then it was all the guys after that. So it was kind of like, let's just get this little girl out the way. Mm. So I was just like, I'm not cutting anymore. Yeah. I'm only going to do meets where I know there's going to be other women. Like, this is just, there has to be an in between. And if I have to travel farther, then I will.
How long ago was that?
2013 was my first meet.
Wow. And in yeah. Alabama, what part?
Well, the first meet was in Louisiana in Lafayette. That's okay. where I'm from.
Yeah.
The last meet in 2013 was an APF meet. I did okay. APF. I did NASA. I did USAPL. I want to say there was one more.
SPF?
No. That might have been it the first year. Because there weren't a lot of meets happening other than those feds. Mm-hmm. But I think total, like, I've probably done 6 or 7 different feds, like, over my year. The only ones I haven't done an SPF meet, haven't done an XPC meet.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. USPF, I think, is another one that's around, that's yeah. been around for a while. I haven't uh-huh. done that one. And then I know USPC just started. I haven't done that one. I'm sure there's a lot more, but I'm just trying to think of the
major ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's probably a good 15 or so that are general, you know, and then not counting like the little smaller ones in here and there, but man, that is crazy. So right now, comparing your training early on, you were doing a conjugate style 4 to 5 to 6 days of training, which is not really, I mean, I guess it could be, but you know, usually it's 4 and then maybe a conditioning or some sort of active conditioning. That was your training then. Let's talk about what your training is like now at this weight, at this age. What is it like for you now?
3 days a week, maybe 4. And you have to like bribe me with some kind of treat to get me to do some cardio because hell no. It should be 4 because I haven't done 4 this week, though it was only 3. I do like a light bench day with cardio, then a deadlift day, then a heavy bench day, then a squat day.
Okay.
And that's how I program for my clients. Steve likes to add an additional light bench on squat days.
Okay.
Which it just depends on how my shoulder's feeling because I do have a current injury that I've had forever and I just refuse to have surgery for it. Mm. So it just depends on how my shoulder's feeling. But that light day is literally like 125 pause for a 5x5 or something like that. And if you squat heavy, 9 times out of 10, I won't bench because getting under the bar that many times, like even just doing this motion right now, it always just feels like crap back here. So
yeah,
to get through a training cycle, especially during prep, I have to be very careful with that.
Yeah. I'm actually having a episode come out about shoulder pain. By the time this one comes out, it'll be out already. But I've been doing a hanging. I've just been hanging. I read this book and it's a hanging pretty much routine. All you do is hang and you hang for an extended period of time. It has been the only thing that has helped my shoulder because I couldn't really squat. My elbow, everything was all jacked up and it was like a good year. But I could not get under. So I was, you know, changing my grip, opening, doing everything possible. But now I don't have any pain in my shoulder and it's like so wonderful because then I don't feel like it holds me back anymore. But at the weights that you're doing, talk about 400 plus.
Yeah. Sometimes I can't even hang because of it. I did an MRI probably 4 years ago and I have an 80% tear in my supraspinatus in my rotator cuff, one of my tendons. So it often just feels like it's weird because when I try to like retract my shoulder blades, like for squatting or benching, or even my mobility overhead, like my left arm will go back a lot farther than my right one. And it's just because it's tight and I feel pulling And a lot of time the pain will radiate to the front of my shoulder. So I just have to be really careful with especially a lot of overhead stuff that I do. But also too, and I kind of talked about this in another podcast I did, listening to the commentary from the American Pro, and they were talking about how like it takes so much energy, that Barbara takes so long to get ready when getting under the bar and getting ready for her bench and whatever. And I'm like, do you know why though? There's a reason I do it that slow, because if I just try to throw myself under the bar to get under it and start moving around all fast, like just doing this is uncomfortable for me.
Yeah.
So I can't just get under the bar fast and hurry up and go. Like I have to really take my time squeezing everything under the bar and making sure it's set right on the right spot on my back.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten under the bar in the right spot, my shoulder will cramp. I'll lose feeling in my hand. Like there's a lot of stuff that happens when I try to rush it. So there's a method to my madness.
Oh, I believe
it. I do it slow for a reason.
I believe it. And you know, it's funny, the older you get, the less likely they tell you to have surgery too. They're like, if you're over 40, it may or may not help you, which is not a very good odds. Like, I don't like hearing that.
Yeah. Pretty sure this would help, because I think I talked to Susan Salazar, and it's weird because she blew out her quad tendon. I blew out my quad tendon. She had something similar with her shoulder and she had surgery and she recovered from it fairly quickly. So I feel like I could if I chose to have the surgery. I just feel like I'm still recovering from my knee. So it still hurts sometimes. And my range of motion is not the same as my right knee. So still dealing with the limitations with that, I'm like, I don't want to deal with this too.
Yeah.
And deal with that. So this is kind of just like, if it goes out or something happens, fine, I'll do it. But until then, not doing it. And I thought my bench was kind of just going to be stuck at around like 260 because of that. But we figured out what works to slowly start getting my bench to creep back up. And so I'm just like, all right, we're still making progress and I'm not having surgery. So can't convince me that I need to do it.
Totally. I totally agree. How did you injure your quad? Oh my gosh.
Ever. I did two meets back to back, which I'm doing right now. Those were 4 weeks apart instead of this being 8 weeks apart. I did the tribute back in 2019 and it was in end of July. And then 4 weeks later, I did that tribute in wraps at 165. I think I weighed like 157, 158 maybe. And I squatted 485 and I pulled 496. And then I cut to 148 for 4 weeks later raw and went to Boss of Bosses.
Holy fuck.
And I squatted 429, which was a meet PR for me. And I finally pulled 501, but I pulled it conventional. So I had been pulling... I pulled it sumo. I had been pulling conventional. My back started bothering me. I switched to sumo, got back up, and finally pulled 501 at a meet, and it happened to be sumo. And so celebrating, I jumped up and down, and I stomped. And I did it three times. I don't know why I didn't stop at one, but the third time, I thought I had, like, my knee had hit the back spotter or something. And when I turned around to reach for him, he was nowhere near me. So I was like, oh, that was weird. So I'm walking off the platform and like every step is progressively worse. And so everybody's cheering and like they go to pick me up and I'm like, hold on, my knee, something's wrong. And so I sat down and instant swelling, but there's no bruising or anything. So I'm just like, ah, whatever, it'll be fine. I wrapped my knee with a knee wrap and I was helping somebody else. Yeah. So I was like, I'll wrap it. I got somebody else I'm helping call numbers for right now. I'm fine. So I get back home, go about my business, go to a doctor, and he tells me, you don't need surgery. You're fine. Just take some time off. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, how much time? And he's like, I don't know. Like, go do some shrugs or something. And I was like, do I look like I need to do shrugs? Like,
shrugs.
That's what he said, which was really weird.
That is weird.
But I had MRI done, and it was literally a page and a half of shit that I had messed up. And it was like, this is strained, this is strained, this is ruptured, this is torn.
Oh, gosh.
How is that even possible? And so he was like, if you want to get a second opinion, I'll send you to another doctor within this facility. This next doctor tells me 100% you need to be in a brace right now, you need to be on crutches, and you need immediate surgery. So I was like, there's no way that this is the same practice with that contrasting of an opinion.
Yeah, that's really weird.
The first doctor sees me walking out from that appointment. He's like, hey, how you doing? So what'd he say? And I was like, he said, I need surgery. And he's like, oh, damn, sorry to hear that. And like, gives me a little side hug.
Oh, I was like, I'm not. You just told me the opposite.
Of y'all. So I go to a third doctor. Third doctor agrees with the second. And he also says, when did you tear your ACL? And I was like,
I did it. Did I?
Yeah. I got a new injury because there's no fluid or no blood around there. But at some point you've torn your ACL and it caused instability in your knee, which is probably why your quad tendon happened. Great. And I was like, well, I haven't had it, so I don't need it. Just fix my quad tendon and I'll be good. And he's like, do you want to risk
doing it again,
injuring yourself because of that instability? So he said he wanted to do the quad tendon first because that was the primary issue. And then he was like, well, wait like 6 months and then come back and do your ACL. And I said, why do you have to wait that long? You can't do them at the same time because the rehabs are opposite. But I was like, how long does it take for my quad tendon to heal? He said, 3 months. I said, then you got 3 months and you're going to do the other surgery. Because if I start feeling good and I get back into lifting, you're not going to get me back in here.
Yeah.
So I did the surgeries 3 months apart. And it probably is why I'm still having issues with getting the range of motion back and still having a lot of achiness and all that stuff, because I should have spent more time in rehab with the quad tendon. But whatever, like, I was just like, I have to get back to training. And they really held me back for a long time with my rehab, just doing like mama shit, like, yeah. Okay, let's stand on this basu ball and balance. And I'm like, I need to go squat. So can we talk about that? And my therapist was like, no. Like, I had surgery in December. In March, I said, I want to squat 135 by Mother's Day. And she was like, there's no way in hell. I did it in April. And then I fired her. I stopped going to my doctor. And I was like, I'm just going to do my own rehab. I did it for one. And then the next week, I did it for a set of 10. And then my knee was swollen and I couldn't squat again for 3 weeks. So I was like, all right, sweetie, you got to find some moderation. You can't do that. But, you know, it just kind of let me know you're not going to break.
Yeah.
You're going to have to deal with some pain coming back from this. But if you want to compete again, that's just part of the game.
Yeah. Wow. That is crazy. You think you might have torn the ACL in volleyball?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm thinking because that's a very ACL.
Hurt in high school where I was on crutches for a couple weeks. Mm. And I was on crutches and then I went back to playing and never did anything with it.
In high school, like, that is so long before.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, you could totally, and you did. I mean, you trained hardcore for so long without it. My old athletic trainer had no ACL and he used to show us, because when you sit down, you know, you could pull the tibia forward. If you don't have an ACL, your tibia will just move. It'll look like a shelf. It'll go bloop, bloop. If you have an ACL, it will just stay like this. So that's like, it's like a test. And he used to just pull it and he could flex and it would pull. And he's like, I don't need to fix it. I'm not going to play sports again. It's not even worth it to me. I was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. But he
didn't even know that.
Yeah. So you can, I partially tore my ACL and they did that test right when I tore it to check. And it was moving. And they're like, I think you might've torn it. And I was so freaked out. I was like, and you know, like, you just heard it and they're grabbing it and going, and they're like pulling it. I'm like, right. Is this okay? Like, can you sure you be doing this? Yeah. But that is crazy.
Yeah. So now when I see people jumping, I'm like, oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, keep your feet on. Like, you know, people doing like tiny, like, he's backflipping. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so crazy.
So I'm so glad I didn't see that.
Oh, you didn't see him backflip? Oh, yeah. He's
tripping. I saw a video after, but I didn't see when he did it in real life, because I probably would have been like,
no. One day something will happen. Well, that's crazy. So your first lifts, your first lifts, you had 225. What was your bench what was your best bench? Yeah.
110, 115, something like that.
115. And then your deadlift was what?
290.
Okay. So your best raw is 429, 430, 281, mm-hmm. and 562. That is crazy. You have an 1168 total, 550 dots. I have your stats up here. It's just so nuts, dude. Oh, so what's the next step for you?
Well, so the Pro Raw Challenge.
Okay.
Which is in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like the showdown, but USPA version of the showdown.
Correct.
And I decided to do that meet kind of just like a spur of the moment. I got an invite. Fuck it. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Mainly because I had one of the worst meets of my life at the showdown. I say that with a grain of salt, only because that was my first meet raw. And it was my first meet back at 148 after surgery. Mm. And I had so much life stuff going on that I tried to tell myself did not matter.
Yeah.
And that cut killed my deadlift. Mm. And so after squats and bench, I was in a position to pull and win my weight class. And I'm like, this is what I do. This is deadlifts. Like, I'm good. And I had doubled 500 pounds twice during that training cycle. So I was like, I'm not worried. My second attempt is 491. Let's go. Like, I'm good. And this is what I need to win. And I go for my second and I miss it. And I was just like, what the hell just happened? I don't know. You're fine. You have another attempt. Shake it off. Figure it out. Go back and pull it. And the third attempt, it got a little higher, but I couldn't lock it out. But I felt when I was warming up, I was like, my glutes are not firing. Mm. I don't know what's wrong, but everything just feels tired. Yeah. And it could be because my squat literally took my soul, like most third attempts do. And so that was kind of one of the things that we've been watching since then, because I don't have an issue with grinding. Like, it doesn't scare me. I'm not going to quit. It doesn't matter how long it takes me to lock it out. But at the same time, it's like, we need to call the third with my deadlift in mind, because whatever you put on the bar, I'm going to give 199%. But what happens to my deadlift?
Yeah.
So we were kind of talking about that with the last meet that I just did, the American Pro, because having Naomi there, having Angelina there, I knew that I was like, okay, so Naomi's probably going to take second. So it'll be probably between me and Angelina for third. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, we need to push my squat as much as we can, because that's kind of where I'm behind everybody else in terms of, you know, everybody else is squatting like 550, yeah. 570. Okay. And I'm just like, I just want to squat 5. Like, I don't even know. That was my goal for the meet.
Wow.
So to go, I was like, okay, we actually almost timed out on my first, because everything was just moving so fast. Like, on the platform, they were switching the weight so fast.
So fast.
And I was just like, oh shit, I'm up. Platform's ready. We're still wrapping my knee. And because I take so long getting under the bar, if I don't do that, it looks like shit. Like, it looks heavier. And Steve's like, what's going on with you? And I'm like, I'm fine. We're just rushing. And it's not feeling good because I'm rushing.
Yeah.
So my third attempt, we wrapped me early and I just had to stand in my wraps a little bit longer, but it gave me the time I needed. And that, like, I remember walking out on the platform. I didn't see anybody. I couldn't hear anything. My ears were ringing. And so I saw him give me the command, but everybody was laughing at me afterwards because I was just like, where are the lights? Where are the lights? Like, I couldn't see if I actually made it or not.
Yeah.
And Steve said he was yelling at me like, you're good. I couldn't hear. My ears were ringing. So he laughs at that. He videoed me coming up to him like, where's my light?
And they're like behind you on the screen. Yeah. Right? That's the problem.
I can't see anything.
Yeah.
It was cool because bench went better than I expected. And then by the time we got to deadlifts, he was like, all right, we know the drill. We got to see what you have. Let's try to put you in position for second on your second, and then we can push your third. But I had no idea that it would finish. I think my total was like, it was 1370, which my best total was like 1220 or something.
Yeah, so 1372. You went 9 for 9.
Yeah.
And 529 on that squat.
Yeah. I was telling him, I was like, I think he had me and Ronell that day. And I think we were the only two that went 9 for 9 that day. And it wasn't like easy 9 for 9s. It was like, there was a little bit of push on those third attempts. So I was really proud of that. So now this meet, coming up, I'm just like, I don't even know what to set for my goals because I've had a tendency to overshoot since coming back. But also, too, because I have to cut to 148 again and I'm going raw.
Yeah.
So I don't know. My goal, I was like, how about like my best squat is 429. Let's go 440. And Steve's like, yeah, no, I'm not listening to you. Literally the week after the meet, I came back on Thursday, got some blood flow. And then that first squat session back, he was like, I know this is going to feel like shit, but we need to see where you are. And I don't want to hear you complaining because you signed up for it.
So you went to max out.
Yeah, not max, but let's close try enough to get you to a top single.
Yeah.
See how it feels. And he had a number in mind, but he was like, I'm going to let you call it. So I ended up my first week back, I squatted 429.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah. But I'm like, crazy. I'm also like 165 right now.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's going to happen cutting to 148 and all that stuff. Yeah. So
that's so fucking exciting. Cause I feel like looking at your progression, you know, cause I always like to look at people's experience, especially you've been training so long. So it's really like incredible. And I think a lot of people who listen to the podcast are starting, they're just starting, you know, they're very in their beginning of training. And a lot of times they see you where you're at now, right? Not really thinking about where you were when you first started for the first couple of years. I mean, that's, you know,
all the way to the bottom of the
keep scrolling.
Yeah, like 40 meets ago or something like that. I think I've done 40 meets.
Has it been that many? That's crazy.
No, because I've done it's a big pace. For sure in the year I got hurt. I had my surgery in September. I had my second surgery in December. And then I competed a year later on the anniversary date of my second surgery.
Wow.
So I've done at least one meet every year since I've been doing this.
Wow.
But that year I got hurt was the one time I only did one meet a year. It's always been, I think, at least three.
Yeah. I think three is like a normal one, like a normal, you know,
five. And that's stupid.
Yeah. But you know, it's always stupid. The case. The beginning people always do that. Like no concept. And I also think that they're probably not at like a real true fatiguing state either, right? They're not really trained. Well, maybe you were because it sounds like you were maxing out all the time and probably tired all the time. But yeah, it's like the balance isn't necessarily so important at that point for them. At least, you know, that's what they think until it starts taking its toll and then you start getting some injuries and things like that. What kind of advice would you give to a budding powerlifter, somebody who's just starting off, probably a female? We have males who listen to the show too, but what kind of advice would you give to a newer lifter?
The biggest thing, don't compare. Like, it's all you, unless you live in the house with that person and go to the bathroom with them and sleep with them, you will never be comparing apples to apples.
Yeah.
So you can't say, well, this person trains at my gym and I saw their program and they're doing this, so why can't I do it? What are they doing when they get home? What's their work schedule? What's their stress like? What's their supplement schedule? Like, you don't know any of that stuff. Yeah. So if I would have looked at, like, I had a coach at one point that didn't last long because I found out she wasn't being honest with me. But I was just like, how have you only been competing for 2 years and your numbers are up here? And, you know, like, this is my second year and I'm nowhere close to that. And she was like, oh, you'll get there. Don't worry. Yeah. But tell me what you're doing behind closed doors. Right. You left that part out.
Yeah.
So I always say, like, you know, don't worry about having to be strong enough to start somewhere because there's no such thing.
Yeah.
And just don't compare. Like, just set goals for yourself. Because even right now, I'm an elite lifter. If I go into a meet thinking I'm only going to go to meets I'm going to win, I'm going to be stuck at local meets or regional meets. Because I knew going into my meet, I'm going to be against Christy Hawkins. Like, what? You're not winning. Unless Christy dies or hurts herself, you're not winning. Like, she'll beat you on her openers.
And she still wins and she hurts herself.
Yeah, exactly. Tear my bicep while I'm locking out and don't drop the bar.
Don't
okay,
drop
Christy.
The bar. Like, who does that?
Christy Hawkins. So you're crazy. Not winning. So I'm like, I look at meets and I think, okay, what's the best outcome that I can have based on what I did for my training cycle? So that's one of the things that I said when I talked to one of my other friends. Like, I knew that if I squatted 500, which was my goal, and I wanted to pull 550. If I accomplish those two things, I won.
Yeah.
I don't care if I got a check or not. Yeah. I don't care where I placed. That was what would make me feel like I had a successful meet.
Yeah.
So I think if you keep those things in mind, it makes it a lot more fun and it helps you have a longevity in the sport versus chasing numbers and doing whatever it takes to get there quick. And then the next thing you know, you're injured after a couple years and out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of women and men too, who get in the sport and they chase numbers fast and then they're gone.
Yeah.
Like how many lifters do you actually know still lifting that have been doing this for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years?
Yeah. And not many.
Smaller. Yeah.
And it's funny to me that like
still be getting better.
Yeah.
After all those years. Like one of my favorites, Ellen Stein, she's still.
Do you know Ellen, she's never not PR to meet? Never not PR to meet.
Right. So I was like, I want to be you.
Yeah.
Either you're sandbagging, you've been sandbagging your whole life. Or I want to be you.
Listen, I will say Ellen's big secret, and she's told me this, is that she sleeps like 12 hours because she's retired. She's like, I'm retired, so I sleep in. Like she's loving that life. And I thought about it. I was like, damn, man, that does like.
Well, you know, and that's one of the things like some of my friends from Texas have been like, bro, what are you doing? You moved to Georgia and your shit just skyrockets. Yeah. Like what? So part of it is this is the first time in my career that I have been able to work in person with a coach every training cycle. Mm. So when it is different, when you're programming somebody, you know, online, remote, whatever, you give them a workout to do and you tell them, don't do anything else but this.
Yeah.
Because you're not there to see what they're doing.
Yeah.
Versus if you work with them in person. Okay. That weight was too easy. We're going to get some more work out of you today. Let's up it.
Yep.
So that has been one of the biggest things that I think has helped me being able to just focus on myself and my training, my sessions, but also too, I sleep a lot.
Yeah.
Like I used to have this mentality of if I had 2 hours to sit and do nothing, something was wrong. You should be programming. You should be trying to get clients. You should be working on your YouTube channel. You should be cleaning something or organizing something. You don't sit down
and
watch.
You're a high achiever. I can already tell.
It's ridiculous. And it was just this constant high alert.
Yeah.
And not only is it not enough sleep, but it's like constantly having my body running on
adrenaline. Yeah. Like, yeah.
And so I take naps now. Yeah. Like I never used to do that. And I'm like, I don't know if this is an age thing, but boo, when I'm tired, I go lay my ass down.
Yeah.
And even if it's just 30 minutes or an hour, like the end of last cycle, my lunch breaks, I used to take naps.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I want to make sure I'm rested and I feel good. I take a sleep aid every night, especially before I train.
Yeah.
Because I don't sleep through the night. I will wake up at 4 o'clock and be up for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Because then I start thinking about everything I need to do. And it really made me realize not only is it helping my weight, but it's also helping me recover. It's making me feel better. The other thing is I used to be so, because I had so many things going on, I'm on a schedule. I have to stick to my schedule. I lift Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. I'm not changing that. We don't push anything back. Like, this is when I have to train. And being here, Steve's like, okay, it's Tuesday. You have to deadlift and you feel like shit. So we're not pulling today. I'm like, but my schedule, but I have to. Like, how is this going to mess up long term? And he's like, do you want to have a shitty session today? Or do you want to have a good session tomorrow? So I was like, okay, I guess we can try it. I don't like it. I'm telling you right now. And if this doesn't work, it's your fault. Like constantly what it is because this rest and change the days and whatever, getting ready for what meet was it? Battle of the Bay, which was also a great meet that I had. I tied my best. Wrapped 165 total before I got hurt at 148.
Wow.
Wow. And I tell you, he changed everything. He started doing everything like backwards and worked it to like this many days. I don't want you to do this. This many days. I don't want you to do this, which means on this day, you're going to train on a Sunday. And then on this day, you're going to train on a Friday. And then I was like,
oh my gosh.
But okay. Just can you kind of like, tell me, so because I'm very OCD, very like all the pieces need to have their place. I was like, just let me know so I can plan around all that stuff. But now I'm home and I train. I don't do anything else. Yeah. I just, my life revolves around my schedule for training, and being able to give it that much attention has made a huge difference. Wow. So it's like, it's going to be hard to like start trying to deviate from that. And like, I don't have much of a social life, but I kind of don't care because I love what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure at some point I'm going to have to try to figure out a balance for that, but not right now.
Yeah.
I don't care.
No, yeah, I would, if I was going the way you're going too, it's like, you get enough social activity at the gym. You got the crew there. It's not like you guys are, you know, like if it was just maybe just your trainer, maybe that might not be enough, you know, social interaction, but I feel like y'all got a really good crew and you joke around and have fun, but really push each other, which is so tremendously helpful. And I totally, when you talk about coaching on the spot, it's so different than, you know, we talk about like, okay, this might be a template, but I don't know how many times I'm changing things in the gym, you know? So it's, and they'll tell me like, well, I thought we were supposed to do 3 sets of that. I'm like, you're only doing 2 because that took you fucking 50 minutes to finish your squats. you're just going to do 2 sets. Okay. But yeah, that is great advice. And comparing is something I feel like we hear a lot about, you know, I think social media really makes it so that people can compare very easy. And one of my members, Susie, wonderful new powerlifter, she was now feeling nervous. She's 2 weeks away. And she's like, I just saw somebody who totaled 1,000 pounds and they're in my weight class. And, you know, and of course, you know, it's like the comparing comes in and said, you can't do that. You know, you'll never enjoy the process. And once you let go of all of that and just find your own personal goals and really strive for that, then you will enjoy it. You'll enjoy every little thing. Like I'm not a very good squatter. Deadlift is my favorite. I squatted 275 and it was like RPE 9 or something, but my meat max is 280. So not even in a, you know, I'm not even in a real training cycle. I'm in a hypertrophy cycle. I just said, fuck it. I'm going to go up because it was feeling good. So, you know, like that was so motivating for me. I was like, holy shit, this is great. We changed things up with my squat. Man, hopefully I'll get 300. Finally, it's been 10 years and I haven't even hit 300 yet. But, you know, it's like those little things that really motivate me. I could most definitely compare to somebody else who is my weight. And I mean, you're, you know, we're in the same weight class. Like, I can't do that or else I won't have fun, you know? And I think that's some of the best advice. Okay. So before I let you go, it's where I ask all my people.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
What the hell was I thinking? Where you think back to a time, sometime in your training, and I feel like you got a lot just hearing your opening story. Where you might have did something and you thought, what the fuck was I thinking doing that? And there's been a lot. There's been things people have taken, ointments they've used, times that they've ate certain things before meat, like you name it. There's been a lot of instances. Is there a time in your life that you look back now and you think, what the hell was I thinking doing that?
I mean, that first meat absolutely takes the cake, because not only was it just not knowing what the hell, like I didn't read the rule book. So I had no idea nothing about a meet. I knew nothing. I just walked in. I didn't have the right equipment. Like it was just go get your feet wet and do it. And I didn't think that through at all.
Did you just totally trust your trainer? Like, oh, he's going to tell me what I need to know. And he did.
Yeah. Yeah. One of those I've trained people of all different sports aspects, so I could do powerlifting, not a big deal.
Oh man, yeah, like no.
So that was definitely it. I think that's honestly probably the worst of it.
Yeah, I mean that's awful. You know what I mean? Like, one, you didn't read the rule book, knew nothing really about meets, didn't really plan out your attempts, right? Like when we talk about what would you have done different had that been your first, if you were to train you on your first meet, what would you have done different?
Find a rule book, at least get the basics or like try to reach. I don't even think at that time, like, I don't know how big social media wasn't that big to say I could reach out to somebody else who was doing it. I didn't know anybody else. Or maybe just take the time to ask questions at weigh-ins. I was so shy and didn't want to like have anybody get annoyed with me. So I didn't ask any questions. I just went in and, okay, I have to weigh in and I'm going to do this. And okay, is that it? Okay, thank you. Bye. And it was just like, there were so many things running through my head. And it was just, I didn't want to be that person. I was like, y'all, there was this girl that came in for weigh-ins and she kept asking on it. You could tell she didn't know what the hell she was doing. And the, like, I didn't want people talking about me like that. So, but now I'm just like, I should have asked more questions.
Yeah.
I should have done some research, yeah. But I didn't even know if it was a sport that I was really going to want to stay in or, you know, so it was just like.
Well, it definitely all worked out. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if you bit the bug, you felt the thrill of that. And it seems like there was no turning back after that point.
I think the biggest thing over the years, it's just, I still love it just as much as I did day one.
Me too.
Even with bombing out, when I PR'd that deadlift, you would have thought I won the meet the way I celebrated. Everything, none of it mattered. None of it counted for anything. But that deadlift literally saved my career.
Yeah.
So, you know, thinking over the years, like everything that I've changed, all of the just different things that I've learned, the mindset that I've had to develop, those are things that are really hard to coach. But because I've had so many different coaches and been exposed to so many different types of training, I think it's made me a more well-rounded lifter. And I can honestly say, like, one of the things that I take the most pride in is the fact I don't, and maybe I'm wrong, you can call bullshit if you want, but I think that I'm a well-rounded lifter. Like, there's not one lift per se that you'd be like, okay, Barbara's really good at this, but she sucks at this.
No.
Like, I train every single lift with the same amount of intensity so that it's not like, okay, well, I know I can do this on squats, but then my bench, like, my bench has been limited because of my injury, not because I don't train it. And so I just, that's always been something I wanted to be proud of. Like, if you need help with squat, I can coach that. If you need help with bench, I can help you with that. If you need help with deadlift, same thing. So I love being well-rounded and I always train that I want my lifts to look how they're going to look on the platform when I train. We're not going to do this half-ass in training where you squat high, but it'll be there on meet day where you don't pause or your ass is coming up off of all your benches, but you're sure it'll stay down on meet day and you're not locking out all the way on your deadlifts or whatever, but you'll be fine. Meet day. Yeah, you know, it's like, don't do that to yourself. Please don't.
No, Barbara, this has been so wonderful. I feel like I learned so much about you. And, you know, really when I get to interview people, it's like your story like this is something that will inspire people. It really is. And I know you think like, oh, like people asking about me, but it's true because it humanizes you too, right? Because they don't know you, right? They just see a number, right, or they see a person on social media. And then when they hear your voice, hear the way you talk about yourself and your experience, that really kind of brings it all in for them. Like, oh, she's just like me, you know, like we're just people.
And I say that all the time, like I'm a normal girl. And my friends who really know me, like I'm shy. So when people come up to me and they're like, can I take a picture with you? I'm like, why? I look weird. No, I don't want to do this. Like it's still, none of that makes sense to me because I'm still fangirl around other lifters. Yeah. So to have people do that to me, I'm just like, what? No, like, I'm a very shy person. And that was the hardest thing to overcome that you don't, and you don't see that on Instagram. You see me slapping my legs and cursing and hollering and whatever. Don't put me, like, I used to have so much trouble being in front of a room and having to talk to people doing stuff like this. My voice would be shaking. Yeah. And so lifting has helped me get over all of that stuff too and be a lot more confident.
Yeah. Totally. I think it helps all of us. You know, if you can stand in front of like the skimpiest looking, you know, wrapped singlet in front of people, like,
crap.
Yeah.
All you good is showing. Mm-hmm. I hate, oh my God. Yeah. Everybody, it always trips me out to see people training in their singlet. I don't pull that shit out till meet day. I don't want to wear it. I don't want to. No.
I have, I do not train. I have my newbies.
I don't do openers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I have my newbies do it because they're so petrified of wearing a singlet that I'm like, listen, you better get used to it. So you put it on mm-hmm. on our last day of training. You put it on. We do all three lifts at like 55%. And it just got, I want you to know this is what it's going to feel like. This is when the bar is going to touch. You know what I mean? Like they just get used to the feeling of working with that on because they like, some of them are like, oh, I hate, you know, I think, I don't think anybody walks out and like, oh, I look great. Like everybody's like, this is, mm-hmm. it is what it is.